Very good. So first of all, about the mobile phones. So what happens if your mobile phone goes off during the meditation? Reincarnated as a police speed camera. Well, it depends on how bad it is. The lowest form of technology. Gets punished. What else? I was saying about fear. Oh yeah,
SARS.
Yeah, SARS and fear. That's right. It was one of the experiments which I saw with my own eyes when I was at Cambridge, the university there. Also a member of the Psychic Research Society. We did some hypnosis. This is a professional hypnotist, and he, you know, everyone, all students, didn't mind being hypnotized. Always willing to see what happens. I wasn't hypnotized, but one of the friends was, and they had a piece of wood with a nail on the end, a 4-inch nail, and they hypnotized this fellow to believe that the nail was red hot, and they touched the nail on the skin, and of course the fellow screamed in agony. It was only room temperature. You could hold it. A child could actually touch it. But because he believed it was red hot, he screamed. I could understand that, but what really shocked me, and the reason I say this now, was a blister came up as well. A real blister. He'd actually burnt his skin with a nail at, you know, just room temperature, because he believed it was red hot. When you see stuff like that, it was one of the first times I realized just how powerful the mind is. And how, if you believe you're going to get sick, you do get sick. Many diseases, please excuse me, but this is my experience and my understanding. So many diseases happen because people believe they're going to get sick. Why is it the case when a person, so they're really, really busy, and then they're fine, you know, when they're working, and as soon as they have a holiday, they get sick? It's well known. So the influence of the mind on your body is quite huge, which is one of the reasons why we have something like these crises, SARS, or in this particular case, coronavirus, whatever it's called. That each one of these, don't be afraid. Be careful. But if you are very afraid of these things, of course, a lot of times you catch those diseases. The mind influences the body. So, no problem at all. Easy. Do you believe me? Hello. What are you waving those sheets of paper up and down for? Oh, yes. You believe we have to chart this. Yeah, come on. This is a beautiful chart. And this is like the Metta Sutta, Loving Kindness Sutta. And it has a lot of really important teachings in there. We don't just chant it for the sake of chanting it. So often when I teach meditation, I focus on things like be contented and easily satisfied. Not proud and demanding in nature. Be contented, this is good enough. Easily satisfied, you don't need much to be happy. You don't have much anyway, so be peaceful, easy, contented and satisfied, not demanding in nature, not proud, means not comparing yourself with others. If you can do things like that, it's so easy to meditate. So I just point those two things out. So anyway, let's just do some chanting now.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to weak views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And sadhu is a Pali Sanskrit word meaning awesome. I was going to say wicked, but that doesn't sound good for a monk to say that. Okay, so meditation. Such an easy thing to do. If you know how to do it. So anyway, that's better. So meditation. One of the simplest things to do, because it's not doing anything, it's learning how to be peaceful. It's a default state of mind. Default means what happens when you're not doing anything. To do something, you need to think about it and plan it. When you're not thinking and planning, you're just here, enjoying this moment. You know, there is, because I do go to conferences, do go to teach in all sorts of different places. Sometimes there are some psychologists who teach how to get rid of all problems. And one of the ones I remember, which is such a simple thing, called nature therapy. All the guy does, he lives in Sydney, he takes people out to the beach, out to the forests, out to the cliffs somewhere. Just beautiful places in the world. And because they're such wonderful places, he doesn't teach anything. He just takes them for a walk, asks them to be quiet and peaceful. And then just the peace and beauty of what you're watching, what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, is enough to calm people down. And after you calm your mind down, often you can actually see the problems which you are over-exaggerating in the world.
And when you see those, you can actually live in this life with far more peace and happiness. So how that actually works is that when the mind is enjoying this moment, and some parts of nature, if you know where to go and look or sit, there's some beautiful places in this world. And if you go to those places and sit down and just look at them, they just satisfy your mind so much that it becomes peaceful. And you stay with that peaceful because you don't need anything, you don't want anything. You are content and easily satisfied. You're just staying there, enjoying this moment. And when you enjoy the moment, your mind gets very peaceful. It's one of the reasons why people like to go to, watch the sun go down, or like to go in the forest, or like to just go out by a lake somewhere and just watch, sit down and watch the lake. Nature does calm you down. And when you actually get satisfied like that, the mind becomes very peaceful. And then you find that a lot, when you come back to your life, back to the city, you find you're so peaceful. The sorts of things which worried you before, which you overreacted to, don't tend to overreact anymore. And a simile for that, which I saw another psychologist cashing from, because I invented this one about that. How big is your hand? How big is my hand? My hand is now so big I can't see any of you. All I can see in life is my own hand, nothing else in the whole universe. Is it because my hand is too big, or is it because I haven't got it in its proper place at the end of my arm? Whilst my hand is the end of my arm, it hasn't diminished in size, it's still the same, but now I have perspective. So what I was obsessing about before, because it was too close to me, is now out here and it's a small thing. And that's just like the coronavirus, just like the bushfire over in Mundijong somewhere, just like so much else in life. I don't know why people get so excited. You know, we had a huge bushfire in Serpentine in 1991. Went right through our monastery. And after it went through, I was there at the time. So it was a crown fire, it was 46 point something degrees before the fire came. It was the hottest day ever recorded in Western Australia at the time. About a few weeks later, it beat that for, went above that temperature a couple of weeks later. But it still remains the second hottest day ever recorded. And that's when a bushfire came right through. If you ever seen a crown fire, that is when the trees explode. Boom! Because all of the eucalyptus oil has been evaporated, not all of it, but a lot of it. And so it forms this explosive mix of vaporized eucalyptus oil and oxygen. And so when a spark comes, the whole thing is like a bomb going off. So I was right in the middle of that. The senior monk there at the time, Ajahn Chakra, was R&R somewhere down south. And so when we got evacuated, Channel 7, I think it was Channel 7, could be Channel 9, but who cares. Channel 7 interviewed me. And they said, "What happened? What happened?" "Oh, I just said there's a fire coming. My monastery's probably gone." And apparently I was so, you know, did you see that?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, of course. I don't tell fibs. And you know what happened later on? I don't know if you know this one, but yeah, about 3 or 4 months later, the journalist who interviewed me, and she called me up again and said, "I haven't been able to get you out of my mind. You know, you're the first person she'd ever seen in a life-threatening situation, things being destroyed, and you were just so cool about it. How'd you do that?" Well, why not? Just worrying about it doesn't bring the monastery back, doesn't stop the fires getting upset. So it's just really cool. Even Curtin University came to do an interview, all the people in the fire, for their trauma studies. All the interviews with the monks weren't ever published because they didn't fit. We were just all cool about it. "Oh yeah, well, you know, it's impermanent. You get a monastery, you lose a monastery, that's life." So we actually think and look in different ways because we're at peace with things. And so later on she actually called me because she had changed her profession from a news reporter to organising this other show, which is called The Hinch Report. Daryl Hinch. She wanted me to go on that show. And I thought, oh, yeah, I don't mind. But then when I told my committee, they said, no! That fellow is just really mean and nasty and whatever. I was really disappointed. Well, it doesn't matter. But anyway, that this is what happens when you don't overreact, when you're peaceful. Which means that you can stay far more balanced amongst the difficulties of life. So this is actually what meditation does for us. I know I get into trouble here because I can keep talking forever and ever. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to start another type of therapy group. We have Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not for people who have drug addictions or alcohol addictions. This is a therapy group for people who can't stop talking. It's called On and On Anonymous. It's a good name, isn't it? We should get a On and On Anonymous for people who can't stop talking. I'll be the founding member, the life member probably. But anyhow, that when we have some meditation, some stillness, we get perspective. And somebody even asked me, I think last weekend, he said, well, where does wisdom come from? Now, understanding real wisdom. Real wisdom always comes from stillness. So when your mind becomes still, you see things as they truly are. That's the saying of the Buddha. Stillness is the cause for seeing things as they truly are. Not thinking. So to give you a simile, imagine a lake up in the mountains. This is a standard old simile. A lake in the mountains on a full moon night, and you're just camping or trekking, or you get up there and you see this lake, and it's no wind in the mountains. So it's perfectly still, that lake. It is so motionless that it's like a glass mirror. And then you stand looking into that lake, and you can see the reflection of the moon and the stars in the heavens above. A perfect reflection. I know in Japanese culture they used to say that the only way to appreciate the beauty of the moon is to see it as a reflection in a still mountain lake. If you've ever had that opportunity to actually to do that, you'll understand just how true that saying is. If there's any agitation in that lake, if there's any wind, or you put a hand in or throw a rock in it or something, it distorts the reflection. You can't see the full moon and the stars. When it's perfectly still, you can enjoy the heavens above you. It's a pure reflection. Only when you are still can you understand the truth of things. Which is why meditation is all about learning how to be still. And many people say, oh, it's all right for you monks to say that, but how can we do that? And it's so simple. And I will now use my visual aids. It's fizzy. Doesn't matter. Got to be careful, because it's fizzy. Sometimes people shake it up before I open it up. No, it's okay. Now my demonstration. And I do need a helper. Doug, you're closest. First of all, Doug, are you an honest gentleman?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, come closer. Please come up here. For this demonstration, again, so people can see. Now, I'm going to hold this glass of water perfectly still. So, yes, has it become still yet? Yeah, has it come still yet?
Has it?
Become still.
No.
Why not? It's because I'm not being mindful. I will now be mindful. Has it become still yet, Doug?
It's getting stiller.
But has it stopped moving yet?
No. No.
Okay. Why? Because I'm not concentrating. I will now be mindful and concentrate. Has it stopped moving?
Still moving.
Yet? Still moving. And this is how many people try to meditate and become still. They're mindful, they try and 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 they try, and eventually they go somewhere else. They think, I can't meditate. You're not doing it right. It's so simple to meditate. All you need to do is let go. Relax. Keep calm.
And now it's still.
Relax the mat. Look at that. I didn't even notice it become still, and it's already very still. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
A round of applause. So many of you may have seen that before, but that's a powerful demonstration. You can talk about these things and tell people what to do, but letting them see their mistakes and the solution is hugely helpful. So in meditation, we just put things down. So how do we put things down? First of all, we put our body down. So it's nice and relaxed. As my saying goes, and it's a powerful saying, relax to the max. So it doesn't mean just ordinary relaxation, really relax your body. And during the meditation, which we're going to do in about 5 or 10 minutes, I'll just guide you into relaxing your body really deeply. And I love this preliminary part of meditation, because if ever you've been really busy, you haven't got much time, and you go to bed and you can't sleep properly, do this meditation, just relaxing the body. Relax it so much to the point it's so delightful you don't want to go to sleep, because it's just too pleasant. Just laying there, and that's when you go to sleep. Next thing you know, in the morning you've woken up, because you've relaxed the body. So that helps there. It's great if you have any diseases inside of you. Can you focus on your body? Just go to the center of the ache, of the pain, whatever it is. Oh, that lady, I'll just say it very briefly, who had anxiety. She was a young student, only 20 years of age, in Adelaide University. Chronic anxiety, panic attack. She couldn't even leave her bed. Every time she, you know, got up, she felt just so tight inside, she went back to bed again. And this girl, that fortunately no doctor could help her, but her uncle was a student of mine here in Perth. So he told her, ring Ajahn Brahm. So it's a very simple solution. He said, okay, now all you need to do, number one, is tell me where is that anxiety attack. Where do you feel it in your body? She said, in my chest. I said, not good enough. I want coordinates. And she was studying dentistry. She was a scientist. So I said, start from your navel, your belly button. How many millimeters up is the center? Is it to the left, to the right? And is it a round? Is it circular? Is it ovular? What is it? Describe it. I said, well, I don't really know. Great. Give me a call in 3 days when you can give me a description. 3 days' time. She described exactly where it was and how it developed, its center, how far it went across her chest. I was asking her to be mindful. And then I said, describe how it feels. Well, it's just, it's tense, not good enough. I want an accurate description. Call me again in 3 days. It's also because I was really busy and I didn't want to sort of talk too long to her. So give her something to do. Get her to be in control of her therapy. Which is an also important thing to do. You know what it's like when doctors tell you everything to do and you're not even part of it, they say you're doing it wrong, you do it this way, do it that way. And it just takes away, it's very humiliating. That you've got no control over your own body. So anyway, feel it, describe it to me. She gave this beautiful description of how it grew and how it got worse and better and this way and that way. I said, okay, you're mindful now. Now the next thing to do is kindness. When you have a panic attack, you feel that feeling, just get your hand and just massage your body. Where you feel the tension when you get panic attacks, just massage it. And then give me a call in 3 days, see what happens. In 3 days' time, she called, I said, what happened? Well, I want to massage that area of the body. It just relaxed and relaxed and relaxed. As it happens when you massage your own body. And he said, and then it sort of disappeared. Physical feeling disappeared. What about the anxiety? And I always remember that moment, because that's what you call the Einstein moment, the Eureka moment. The light bulb goes on. So he paused and said, the anxiety went too. Yeah, great. Now you know how to deal with the anxiety. Bye-bye. And I hung up. And it worked. Beautiful. A couple of days later, she was out of bed, back to studies, and she was with her boyfriend, Lloyd. And of course, about a year later, so they came back to Perth, and in the sunken gardens, I did a marriage ceremony for them. Really nice. Happy. And oh, they're really great people, Lloyd and Chippy. They got a couple of kids now. But anyway, just how to deal with anxiety by being aware of your own body. Mindfulness and kindness, those two just relax you to the max. And panic attacks, anxiety, just can't find a space to get into your body. So we really had to relax your body. And then you do the same to your mind. You relax your mind. How do you relax your mind? Number one, you let go of all the past and the future. Oh, your past. I don't know why we keep hanging on to our past and keep worrying about it. A lot of times because people think that you're a bad person or you're responsible, you should have done it better, blah, 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 blah. There's nothing wrong with you. Do you trust me? Now, sometimes the people have known me for a long time. Some of these little kids have been coming to the temple and monastery since they were 2 or 3 years of age. They're great because they really do trust me. So when I say, there's nothing wrong with you, you're fine. Little, no, Mum's not here tonight, good. Mum sometimes comes here. 18-year-old kid. And she wants to go over to Melbourne by herself, first time, for a bit of fun with her friends. Her mother's, oh, why should I let her go? Come on, let her go, 18 years of age. She's a really good girl. She'll look after herself. I don't know why mothers are just so controlling and worried about their kids. Let them go, they'll be fine. And so anyway, I talked her mum into letting her go. So all these kids and stuff who come up there, they trust me, and the mothers trust me, they know me for a long time. So there's nothing wrong with you. Imagine that. That you're okay. You belong. Like the old simile of the trees in the forest. If you are bent and crooked, damaged by life, mistreated, abused, really sort of given such a hard time so far in your life, sick, dying, contagious, or I should say that I've got a contagious disease, so don't come too close to me. Or maybe you can come close to me. You know my contagious disease? No, not. Well, it's got a much better name than that. It's called Hepatitis B. Oh, come on. Happy Titus. You come too close, associate too close to me, and you might catch it. Not hepatitis, that's dangerous. Happy Titus. What that means is that when you are let go of your past. Oh, I did all sorts of terrible things when I was young. You've done lots of terrible things when you were young. But you let that go. You're just learning. You're growing. You learn from mistakes in life. And you let go of the past. And that's for your future. Who knows what your future's going to be? The future's uncertain. But one thing I can say, and I think you can trust this, now is where your future is being made. Right now. You're making your future. So why not make a peaceful, happy moment? That's the best you can ever do for your future. So don't worry what I'm going to say, what I'm going to do. I don't make all these plans. I'm a terrible planner. Instead, I just try and live in the moment as much as possibly can. Because I know that this moment, if I make this moment good, happy, peaceful, connecting with you, then it means that all the other moments in the future will benefit from being here, relaxing, being kind right now. So, I stay in the moment. That's how we meditate. So let go of the past, let go of the future, and have this wonderful sense of confidence. You're okay anyway. And then you'll find you're peaceful. You'll find that you are. Now listen very carefully to what I say here, because this is really important for understanding meditation. To listen to what I say, because as I'm talking, you begin to notice some spaces between my words. In those spaces, what was going on inside of you? You were silent. How easy it is to be silent, to relax to the max. All it takes is a different way of looking. Instead of when you came in here, I noticed that the configuration of the room has been changed. It's usually I sit over there, now I sit over here. Maybe next week we can do it the opposite way around. I don't care. But what I do know is that when I do come in here, I train myself not just to look at you, but look at the space in this room. Look at the gap between the ceiling and the floor, the space between you. You know, there's more emptiness and space in this room than there are people and things. There's more space. Can you see that? There's more silence in you than there are thoughts. Well, sometimes we don't even notice it. So when you start to notice the silence, you get one of these amazing new ways of looking in your own meditation. You can be peaceful. Notice the silence and the space, the gaps are far more beautiful. It's the silence which surrounds us all, connects us, joins us together. So that's why the greatest wisdom comes from such silence. And after a while, when you're silent in a moment, you get so happy. Have a wonderful time. That's how you catch Hepatitis B. Okay, so that's how we meditate. So simple. And if you forget all of that, don't worry, because I will guide you during the meditation. Okay? Have I missed out anything? No? Okay. So, first of all, I invite everybody to stand up. And have a good stretch. Yeah. You've been sitting down for a while. We don't have any aches and pains. And once you've had a good stretch, then we can all sit down again. I'm going to sit down on the floor, because that's where I like to be. Connected to mother. So we're going to check out the new feng shui of this place now. I know this one guy, he had marital problems. So he got a feng shui master in the house. And asked him, how did it go? He said, it was great, because feng shui master invited him to rearrange the furniture. Solved all his problems. When his wife was out shopping, he put all the furniture against the front door so she couldn't come in again. No more problems, he said. I'm sorry about that. But you get used to me after a while. Can you hear okay in the back? Yeah. In the front you can. How's it in the back there, Doug? Okay, very good. He's giving me the finger. the thumb rather. Very good. Okay, so you're sitting down here, close your eyes, because when you close your eyes you can be more aware, first of all, of your body. Now this is recorded, so afterwards you can get a copy of the recording if it works for you, so you can do this at home. You'd be laying in your bed or sitting anywhere in the garden, whatever, because it helps. So you close your eyes and become aware of your body, and first of all, be aware of your legs. To be aware of your legs, you can ask them, legs, are you comfortable? When you ask a question of a part of your body, it's like a doctor asking you just how do you feel? But you're asking the question yourself, your own legs. What answer did you get? You ask your legs again, can I improve your position? Do you need to be pushed forward or brought under the chair more? Or if you're sitting on the floor, crossed a different way? How are you? And if you find that you can improve the posture, then please do so. Don't just take it for granted. And of course, I am a very well-known, respected meditation teacher in the world. There is no fixed meditation posture for everybody. So you find how it feels for you. And that's, you know, how you sit today. So you check your body. If you need to scratch it, please do. So, checking my legs still. That's pretty good. And then you move up the body to relax your bottom, your buttocks. It's a simple part of the body, but it takes a lot of weight when you're sitting on a chair or a cushion or a stool. Now is the time to fidget, to get that cushion just in the right place. I always tend to do this, because I usually am talking when I'm meditating when I'm teaching other people. So I spend a little few moments making sure there's no folds of robe cutting into my flesh. It will hurt later on. It might even cut off the blood supply on the outside of my legs and cause pins and needles. It's not dangerous, but it's just irritating. So I'm very careful and kind to make sure that my bottom is comfortable. And then I stretch I like stretching the back. I ask my back, how are you? And I usually begin with a little stretch, because I see animals doing this. Dogs and even kangaroos doing a good stretch against the trees of the monastery where I live. It releases endorphins into the bloodstream, it feels good, and then I just relax my back. If you're on a chair, you can lean back if you wish, or you can lean forward. Find the most comfortable position. This is mindfulness together with kindness. If you get your body comfortable to begin with, then it's just so easy afterwards. It's called relaxing to the max by using mindfulness and kindfulness, what I call kindfulness. And then I spend special attention to my shoulders. Ask my shoulders, shoulders, both of you, how are you? And I move them around just to exercise them and to loosen them. And you know, once you're aware of the feelings in these parts of your body, you can actually control them. You can make them tight by scrunching them up. You can relax them by loosening them. And over weeks, months, years of training, you can get any part of your body and really relax it. It's a great thing to learn. So I'm relaxing my shoulders and inviting you to relax your shoulders as well. The awareness, mindfulness, it gives you feedback. You do this and you find out through your mindfulness whether it's more relaxed or more tense. And that part of mindfulness, the ability to get feedback, is really important. Find out what relaxes your shoulders. Trial and error at first, but eventually you learn. And then I go down my arms to my hands, especially finding out where I've got my hands situated, and make sure they're comfortable. It's just like asking somebody, are you happy down there? Are you comfortable? And I do that to parts of my body. Are you comfortable, hands? And sometimes even just being aware and being interested in other people's comfort and well-being, that reassures them and relaxes them. And the same thing happens to my own parts of the body. I relax my hands. So they're really comfortable. I've got my hands in my lap right now. Sometimes I put them other places. But I find out they're comfortable. Then I go back up to my shoulders, make sure they're still relaxed. And up to my neck. Sometimes people, they sit and their head is too far forward or too far back, too far to the left or the right. I just make sure I move my head backwards and forwards until I find the optimum position. The best situation for my head on top of my neck, so the muscles feel at ease. And then I go inside to my throat. I do have allergies. That's from my father, he had asthma. I just make sure that my throat is relaxed as possible. And then I go to my head, especially to my face. Because those muscles on the face, they can be tightened, they can be screwed up, they can be configured so people know that you're angry or you're afraid. Or you're happy, depending on the muscles of your face. They are connected to your emotional world. So I'm just aware of the muscles around my eyes and my mouth especially. And I loosen all those muscles, the awareness and the letting things go. So it's like, if those muscles are tight, it's like I'm pulling either end of a set of strings and I let them go. And the muscles around my eyes start to loosen. And around my mouth loosens. As I'm relaxing the muscles in my own face right now. And then I've relaxed parts of my body, one by one. Now I look at my whole body sitting here, connecting it all together, and making sure my whole body is relaxed and at ease. Any minor adjustments I can do now. But when my body does get relaxed, honestly, it feels so peaceful, so delightful. This is my 69th year. And to get my body to be so fit and healthy and just so relaxed, it's delightful. And I recall it's why people go on holidays and sit on the beach and relax. Or why you go in a hot tub and relax. But I just do that just sitting down, meditating. And instead of being afraid of the delightful feeling of physical relaxation, I'm really aware of it. I delight in it. And I notice that the relaxation goes deeper. I get more relaxed. Physically, it's like I can hardly feel any muscles in my body being stretched or being squashed. Everything is just so open and loose and free and pleasant. Physical relaxation is the start of our meditation practice. Keeps you healthy. And once I've enjoyed the delight of physical relaxation caused by kindfulness, then I go to something which I invented called the peace-o-meter. Now you have a thermometer, you've got a speedometer on your car. How peaceful are you right now? Imagine that peace, or its opposite, agitation, on some scale. Like a thermometer is a scale, this is a peaceometer. Really peaceful is 1, really agitated is 10. What's the reading of you right now? How peaceful or how agitated are you? Don't need to tell anyone else, which allows you to be honest to yourself. Now, being mindful, being aware of how peaceful you are or how agitated, what makes your peaceometer reading go closer to 1? What calms you down? What agitates you? What lifts that reading higher and higher? Just like we know how to relax our body, now we learn how to relax our mind. Listen to the kookaburra. Listen to the sound of the aircon. Feel the coolness or the warmth of the air on your body. Just being here in this moment calms you down. Yes, you have things to do later on, but leave those to later on. Now be free in this moment. The place where your future is being made. And be kind to this moment. Appreciate it. Right now you don't have to do anything. You don't have to live up to anybody's expectations. And don't live up to your own demands. Be content. Just to be here, easily satisfied, just happy to be here, in this moment, in this safe group. Just relaxing. Right now, being kind, not judging. See if you can feel relaxation happening. The fight and the struggle of life stopping for a few moments as you just are here, just being. Beautiful present moment awareness. And if you do find some peace, see if you can notice the delight associated with that peace. So nice not to have to do things, just to be here relaxing. Enjoying nothing. Beautiful emptiness, freedom. And you might start being aware of your breathing, because that's still moving. If so, just let the breath be. Just notice your breath as it comes into your body. Don't force it or control it. As you're breathing in, imagine you're breathing in peace. What does peace mean to you? Whatever it means, breathe that in. With every in-breath, health, energy, whatever it is you're missing in life, breathe that in with every in-breath. And as you breathe out, let go. Any trauma, worries, health, concerns, anxieties, breathe that out with every out-breath. And as you can imagine, this smoke coming out of you with every out-breath, all the diseases, problems leaving you. And every in-breath, pure, clean, energizing air coming into you. Breathing in peace, health. Breathing out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in beautiful peace. Breathe out any sickness, ill health, worries or concerns. Breathe that out. Breathing in beautiful positive thoughts. Breathing out all negativity. As if you're not doing the breath always does itself. You're just watching it, like a kind mother watches her child. You're just watching your breath come in and go out. It knows how fast or how slow. It knows how much air to bring into your body and what to take out. You're just a passenger, just enjoying the journey. You're not the driver. This is where you relax to the max. Just watching the breath in this moment.
not counting the breaths or planning them, not remembering the breaths happened before, just being with the breath happening now. Not needing to think about problems or concerns. Go inside to your breathing. That is where you can find some stillness, where understanding occurs. This is your time out. Relaxation. Freedom, peace. Breathing in peace. Breathing out, let go. I am now going to be quiet for 5 minutes. And afterwards, when I start speaking again, we'll be close to the meditation end.
Breathe in peace. Breathing out, let go. How do you feel now? How relaxed is your body? And how peaceful is your mind? And how delightful is this? The more you let go, the more peaceful you have. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound of the gong. When the last ringing disappears, come out from the meditation. Okay. Someone enlighten us. Ooh. Excellent. How was the time there? Oh, excellent. Second half an hour.
That's good.
Excellent.
Getting old.
Excellent.
You said you were only 69.
Yes, I'm getting old. I'm not old yet.
Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Okay, oh, I got the question. Yes, that's what the question is. Now, the question is, guests arriving, ceremony start, dana offerings to monks, acknowledgements. I've got the wrong side. Oh, come on, Rachel. You know me, upside down. What is Ajahn Brahm's favourite genre of music? It's not a question, it's a joke. The favourite type of music. And the answer is? Call it here, heavy metal.
Oh.
Not heavy metal. Heavy metal. It's a joke. Someone tried it. You see, I don't know why that comes. But, you know, with music and meditation and stuff, that sometimes I don't know about you, but when I grew up in London. And growing up in London, had some great musicians there. And so I was really into it when I was growing up. And so I used to go and watch Jimi Hendrix play. And I remember seeing the Rolling Stones when I was only 11. That was when I stopped liking girls. You know why? Because I went there to listen to their music. And they go, ah, I love Mick Jagger, ah, I said, shut up, ah. Those days where people would scream, and I said, shut up. But I didn't hear a thing, except screams and screams, and that's not what I got in there. I had to sneak in there to get in. But anyway, later on I saw lots of other great musicians, I don't know if anyone likes really heavy metal, like Led Zeppelin. You like Led Zeppelin? I saw their very first concert.
Wow.
In a Marquee Club. I was there. And they all came up and said, we were really nervous. They called themselves the New Yardbirds then. Yeah. I was really into that. And I saw what else? I went to this band up in the north. I think I wrote about this somewhere. I went to this band in a pub in the north of in London. And there's only 6 people turned up to listen. And I was one of those 6 people who turned out. You know what the lead singer was called?
Rod Stewart. Well, it's pretty good, a private concert by Rod. I don't think he remembers me though. But anyhow, one of the things with music is, well, I use this as a simile quite often, especially for funeral services. What's a funeral got to do with great musicians? Because when my father died, I was only 16, and I never weird. I loved that man a lot. He was the one who told me about opening the door of your heart and so many other stuff which I got from him. But when he died, I never felt sad. I never cried, which was a strange experience. You love someone so much, you don't feel sad that when he passes away. I never cried since because of his death. And it took me a long time to understand how I was feeling when he died, at his funeral ceremony, everything. And then it was the simile of music which answered all my questions. Because after the concert was finished, I would be one of the first to stand up, clap my hands and shout for the encore. More, more, more. And in those days, you know, in that 60s, when my father passed away, that, you know, a few times he came really close and he took him in and just did this and did that and managed to bring him around again. He had did quite a few encores. But then he died. And after the encores in great concerts, in pubs, Albert Hall, I remember seeing one of Deep Purple's first concerts. Remember Deep Purple?
Yeah,
that was over in the Albert Hall. They were just starting out. But in all these great concert halls over in London, that after the concert was finished, and after the encores had been finished, the orchestra or the band had to go home. And I knew you'd never hear that great music again. You know, that maybe different music, but not like that. But when I went out into the cold, gloomy, rainy, drizzly London nights, I never once cried because the concert was over. I just thought how wonderful it was, how lucky I had been to listen to such great music. And that's how I felt when my father died. How fortunate I was to have a great dad for 16 years. I would have loved more encores, please, 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 but I was just so satisfied for 16 years of beautiful performance. And I tell people that when somebody in your life you love very much passes away, don't think what you've lost. Think what you've had. 16 years of beautiful teachings, beautiful love, so much kindness. Thank you so much. When I thought like that, that's why, how can you feel like crying at the end of a concert? So I use music, these beautiful emotions which music sort of engenders in you, and the beautiful emotions which a loved one engenders in you, to compare those and to realize that why is it we always just cry when we lose things, rather than think what a wonderful time we've had. And of course, you know, that teaches you so much, you don't actually lose anything. I remember just so, so many of the times I have with my father. A good example of that, I remember him coming home one day and he told my mum, and I was listening in, that I was really so sad. One of his friends was in a motorbike accident, and this was a long time ago, and he said when in his motorbike accident they took him to the hospital and the leg was so badly injured and damaged they had to amputate the leg. And of course, if it can happen, it does happen sometimes. When it got out of the operating theatre, they realised that they'd taken off the wrong leg. So they had to get put straight back into the operating table and take off the other leg. He lost both his legs. And as soon as he was well enough, he got a lawyer and tried to sue the hospital. But he lost his case. He didn't have a leg to stand on.
And I remember my father telling me that joke. So all the bad jokes you hear here, it's not me. I've been brainwashed by my father for 16 years, but he was a funny man, but a very loving man as well. And so all of those things, which don't ever think what you've missed when somebody leaves. Think what you've had. This is our life. We have each other's company for a while. We learn so much from one another. And then life goes on and we meet somebody else and have another journey in our life, another route we travel on. And so many different experiences in life. It's not always the same person. So don't ever think that separation or death is a loss. It's a gain that you've known that person for such a long time. It has changed so much. So that's one of the reasons why that similar like music. Music is something which is not really, well, at first it's not really logical. It goes into your heart and you feel music. One of the, when I was young, I used to like the rock music, but later on I liked more, before I became a monk, this is, I started liking more classical music. And I wondered why I love classical music. I can, you know, sit there in an auditorium and listen to some great music for an hour. And sometimes I wonder why. And then I realized that when I was listening to classical music, which went on for such a long time, all that time I wasn't thinking at all. Because imagine, like in a concert, all these people sitting there. If someone, you know, talked to the person next, oh, that was really good, you know, that's a guitarist or that sort of violinist, oh, she's really good, you'd be thrown out. Because when you start discussing, when you're trying to listen to great music, you're stopping other people being able to hear that music. So what was happening there? Everyone had to be quiet during the concert until it finished. Bye. And not only to be, bye again. The back. No trouble at all. Nice to see you. So they were not only really sort of, listening to great, they had to be quiet, not speaking. But I realized you had to stop thinking. Listen to great music. Because if you start thinking, you miss the next notes which are coming. And I thought that was an amazing just little understanding of why great music, you can listen to it and it makes you very peaceful. Simply because you're not thinking. It takes your mind and focuses on something very beautiful and very wonderful. So after listening to rock music, I started preferring classical music. But then I managed to find myself, sometimes I would go over, especially the vacations, you know, when I was at university, or even when I was teaching, I was a school teacher for 1 year, taught in a high school in England. And if any of you ever taught in a high school, that's enough to make anyone think of leaving the world and becoming a monk or nun. But no, that's good fun. But even there, I'd try and find places of quietness to go to. And there were some places I would go to. I used to go up to Scotland during the vacations, up into the mountains, just taking a tent, sleeping bag, and just a few bit of food. I had some wonderful times out there. So peaceful. And sometimes people think, right, it's true, that in London, during the winter times, when you can see all these great bands and stuff, it was very cold and dark. But the alternative to that was the summertime, when the sun would come up about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, it wouldn't go to set until about 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and it was warm and green, and it went right up into the north of Scotland, where the hours were longest. And nobody went up there because there was no hotels and roads and stuff. So I would get up there and have a wonderful time and just sit down there in nature. It was so calm and peaceful. And if there was any noise, maybe the noise of the wind which was just blowing over the mountains or over the fells, or the sound of the river, just lots of water over there just bubbling over the creeks. And that was just so delightful. And that would make me peaceful.
It was like nature music, but it was real. You were right there listening to it all. And that reason why it was beautiful, because it just gathered my whole attention. And I was just with it, every movement. And then of course there were some times when you go up to like in a valley or somewhere and there was no wind at all. Silence. And that was the best music of all. So the genre of music I really love is the silence. And there was this one time which comes to my mind right now, was when the monks over in Thailand, the Western monks, we started a monastery in Sussex. And I went over there to visit. And when I went over there to visit, because I was a visitor, I didn't have any duties to do. So one morning, it was in, it must have been December or January or sometime, it snowed that night, really heavy snow. And I learned from the newspapers, that night, minus 26 degrees. That was really cold. And it snowed so heavily that the roads were blocked. Heathrow Airport had to shut down, no planes could take off. And all the birds were you know, in their little nest or hibernating somewhere. Same as everything that moved on the ground was sleeping. And they have this saying, only mad dogs and Englishmen, and monks as well, go out in such weather. But I got as many boots, jumpers, jackets, beanies on as I possibly, scarves, and I went out for a walk in the forest. People thought I was crazy to go out in such temperatures. But it was one of the most magical mornings of my life. I still remember and talk about it a lot. Because when I went, no one else was out. No one, no cars on any roads. No planes in the sky. No birds to be seen. No squirrels, you know, just scurrying around the bushes. Everything was stopped. It was like the whole forest, the whole county of Sussex, the whole of south of England was just mine. Like the only man alive. And when I stopped walking, like everything stopped. When I moved, you could hear the crunch of the freshly fallen snow under my boots. When I stopped, it was total silence. That was so sweet, so delicious. Because there, when everything stopped, there was no problems, there's no plans, no memories. It's as if thinking would just be like soiling the beautiful silence. It'd be like having a flower and just urinating on it. It was like having a sky and polluting it. That's how I felt, because the silence was absolutely perfect. I never ever wanted to destroy something as golden as that in the early morning. And that is my favorite music. When there's nothing moving at all, and everything stops and is still and is peaceful. And all your problems, all my problems, all the stuff which I had to do in my life, all vanished. Because no one was there. Even I vanished. Isn't that beautiful? So, those are some of the best music. The music of silence. And you know that once you can actually experience that silence, it's sacred silence. That's why people sometimes go out into the bush in Australia. I mean deep into the bush. Sometimes, you know, I've never actually been deep into the bush in Australia, simply because I just go into my cave, get the same experience by being quiet. But some people tell me, and I can imagine it, you go deep into the bush and hundreds of miles from the nearest person. Imagine what that must feel like. You're safe. Don't have to worry, but you can't hear anything. It's like life stops. And with the life stopping, all the problems and difficulties, they stop with it. And you get these moments, these gaps between all of the problems and the work you have to do in life. When there's a problem, it's work. You've got to solve it. You've got to do something about it. But in the silence, nothing's happening. That's so cool. I remember just being a student. Whenever I did any shopping, which I had to do in those days, in London, you know where I used to go to get some peace and quiet? In Westminster Cathedral. Because it's a huge place, and in those days, there were maybe a few tourists, but not many. And in that, it's a massive building. And you could always find a little quiet corner just to sit down and be silent. And just to rest, because, you know, busy traffic or busy sort of shopping, waiting here and queuing up there, and I just would go in there just to R&R, rest and relaxation, and it was so wonderful. I always thought that that's an important part of any like holy place. You don't need to have a sermon or have any images there, you just need silence. Silence was the main image. And that, you know, the last time, just before I went off to Thailand to become a monk, I went in there and I was just so disappointed. It was sacrilege. They'd installed a PA system. Oh, what do they put that in there for? And with announcements and the next sermon will be, if you want to buy anything, come over here. It's so hard to find quietness these days. But there are a few places. One of those places of quietness and silence is Bodhinyana Monastery, Jhana Grove. It is. That's why I live there. I love that place. And there's sometimes there's no wind. You get up early in the morning and it's really so quiet. Nothing is moving. And you don't want to even cough to disturb anything. That's more sacrilege. And the silence is so healing and therapeutic. Because the silence, you can't resist it, it just comes inside of you. And you can't, it's just like heavy noise can sometimes upset you. But silence just calms you right down and becomes so inside of you, you are the silence. And everything, all the problems you have in your life, all the health problems, family problems, money problems, life problems, they all just go out and they go further out and you can hardly see them as the silence dominates. So calm, so peaceful. And the last little story, just before I see if you have any questions, more questions, was that even, I told this to someone the other day, a few years ago, after lunch, this gentleman came to see me, and I didn't know who the heck he was, and he said, "I just come here to say thank you." I said, "For what?" He said, "For your car park." "My car park?" "Yeah, your monastery car park." I said, "Why?" And he said that he was the building manager at Serpentine Jarrowdale Shire. Every time we put an application for a hut or for a kitchen or something, he's the one who would sign it. And I said, "Well, we thank you for helping us." He said, No, "I've come here," because he was retiring that day. It was his last day at work. He was retiring and just living off his pension or going overseas or somewhere. And he said, every time, the head office was in Mundijong, every time I got stressed out at work, I just come in my car, come into your car park and sit in your car park. You never tried to talk to me, convert me or sell me anything. I could just come in at any time of the day, morning, afternoon, when I was stressed and just sit and relax. He said, that kept me sane all these years. Thank you for your car park. He says, you're welcome. And I thought, how wonderful that is, just a place of peace and silence and calm. We can just come in there and no one will come up and talk to you, what do you want, how are you doing? If you want that, you can come and ask one of the people. But a lot of time, all we really need is to pick up on the energy, the calmness, the relaxation. And when you're around relaxed people, wow, you certainly get relaxed yourself. So much so that even this person
before he left, he had to come and say, thank you for your car park. So it's almost 12:30 now. So any questions? Oh, come on, yeah, come on. You're really quick. You're waiting to jump up. Very good. Yeah, got a question, yeah?
I'm interested to know, earlier in your talk you mentioned imagining a very still pool and a water, I think this is what you said, and a moon and against a mountain.
Yeah.
So that was a very powerful image for me.
Yeah.
Can I use that as a meditation
of course.
Object, or is that a distraction
oh.
technique?
Oh,
so
it's
what's
great.
The difference between a visualization and meditation?
Visualization, but you should be meditating for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a visualization, as long as it doesn't generate thoughts. Because sometimes you have a visualization. Say you have a visualization of, well, let's say, like Scott Morrison sitting by that river. Now you see that creates thoughts. It does indeed. So that's why visualization is something natural, peaceful, then that would actually create a sort of a peaceful mind. So you can try different sort of visualizations, different ideas, and especially if you've ever done that in your life. Sometimes I ask people this, what's your most peaceful, delightful feeling you've ever had in your life? You know, sometimes it's not just when you're on holiday, you changed your job, when you got married, or when you got divorced, or whatever it was, when you had your first kid. Sometimes the most delightful thing in your life has been such a simple thing. And you look, why was it just a beautiful, happy memory? The sort of memory when, if you could change it and get another person, or get rid of that person, or change the weather, say no. If it was a genie there and gave me 3 wishes, I'd tell the genie, go, I don't need anything. Perfect contentment. You look at the people you were with, who you were, the weather, your finances, your health, they weren't perfect, but you were just happy to be here. And you didn't want anything else in the whole world right then. Simple, peaceful. And you realize it's moments of contentment. The moon, it's very hard to be angry at the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice lake, clean, peaceful. If you imagine it, you can make it into something peaceful and beautiful. It creates so much stillness and peace in you. But it's an old simile. They've been doing this for a couple of thousands of years at least. So it works. You may have other similes. There's something peaceful and calm like a lake. The ocean is sometimes just too, it moves too much. Too many waves. Only a lake can be perfectly still. A night time when hardly anyone is around. And the moon comes up and it's just a beautiful soft light. It's not intense, you can see, but it's peaceful. So that is wonderful imagery. Okay, thank you for that, Rachel. Is there any other question before we finish off? Okay, yeah. So thanks for all your hard work.
Thank you,
putting up with me.
No, a lovely balance between hepatitis and
the
stillness
yeah.
and
oh,
the
yeah.
space and the images that you gave us, as well as a reminder of finding space within this room, finding
yeah.
stillness within the mind. So thank you very much for the meditation tonight and the teachings. Most
yeah.
appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Very good. Oh, I haven't got it. Oh, what a shame. Oh, not there. Okay.